Don't Move a Muscle, the podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Joe.
And we're your hosts, and we are going to host you through Chapter 8 of Prisoner of Azkaban, Flight of the Fat Lady.
It hasn't been that long since we've recorded an episode. I don't know what threw you off this time.
I can't keep consistent. Speaking of consistency, we are using different microphones today, so if we sound really different and you hate it, send me an email and I'll think about what I've done.
We are so desperate for emails. We bought new microphones.
I bought new microphones. Yes. Let's be
exact. Cassie bought new microphones. So let us know if that sounds good. Next week, we're going to try it with just like a lot of weird background noises. So tell us if that annoys you too.
Yeah. And then we'll start doing blind tests. One of us is using a different microphone this time. Can you guess who? No, not really. It's just, I can't help myself. But right, Harry Potter. So Chapter 8, Flight of the Fat Lady. This was a weirdly short chapter to me.
It was pretty short.
I read it in 3 minutes.
I do not have many notes for it. There weren't too many things that...
I have a page and a half, which for me is not a lot.
Yeah, for you, that's nothing.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's my turn to do the chapter summary for our listeners who are new to this episode, this podcast. We try to do our chapter summary in 30 seconds or less. So it's my turn. Joe is getting a timer ready, and he has it. He just showed me. And here we go. October approaches at Hogwarts. Wood is determined to win the Quidditch Cup this year. Crookshanks continues to pursue Scabbers, and the first Hogsmeade visit looms near. Ron encourages Harry to ask McGonagall for permission to go to Hogsmeade, which he does, but she says no. Hermione feels it's for the best with Black on the loose. While Hermione and Ron are in Hogsmeade on Halloween, Harry joins Lupin for a tea and a chat. Later that night, the students find the fat lady's portrait torn and empty. Peeves says it was Sirius Black.
25 seconds.
Nice. Okay. I paused mentally for a moment there because I think I've mentioned this before. When I write characters' names, I tend to abbreviate, even though I'm typing these now. So McGonagall becomes McG.
Okay.
Hermione Herms, which you've disallowed me from calling her on the podcast.
Yes.
And Voldemort is just V.
Sure.
Yeah. So that threw me a little bit.
Does
there.
Peeves have a...
No.
Okay.
He's not important enough.
Okay.
Okay, so before we get into this chapter, not to relitigate the last episode, but I want to circle back to the Snape in Neville's grandmother's clothes thing. And it is mentioned in this chapter, to be fair.
Yes, it is.
The chapter opens up and it's like, yeah, the students are buzzing about this. It's taken over
Snape
the school.
Snape has found out
and
is now bullying Neville more.
He's not pleased about this. So it didn't occur to me when we recorded the episode last week. It occurred to me when I was listening back to the episode in my car, which is something that I do. I don't listen to the full episodes because it's weird. I mostly download them to make sure everything is working and that I didn't forget to put in the intro music or something. But this occurred to me when I listened back later. Do you think that this Snape in Neville's grandmother's clothes story thing falls under the man in a dress trope? Are you familiar with the trope is maybe a better way to start this conversation?
I mean, it sounds self-explanatory.
It mostly is. So to give a little context and to relate this directly to J.K. Rowling, this has come up a lot around her latest mystery novel, which I cannot remember the title of and frankly don't care to. But the latest mystery novel that she penned has as its villain a serial killer man who disguises himself as a woman to trick his victims. And many folks have called this out as deeply transphobic, which I agree with, especially in the harsh light of Rowling's Twitter activity. If it was just the book, it would still be bad.
Problem.
But especially with her being the way that she is on Twitter, it's like, okay, you knew what you were doing here.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like propaganda.
Yes. And as a whole, it invalidates the experience of actual trans women, boiling them down to men with some kind of insidious or dangerous motive, which Rowling has repeated on her Twitter account in different ways. I'm not going to restate her words because they're gross and I don't need to give her any more of a platform than I already do. But so there's that trope that recurs across mediums of men dressing up as women to do something bad, to trick people in some way. There's another side of the man in a dress trope, and I'm not an expert on any of this, but there is another side of the man on the dress in a dress trope where, like, cross dressing, especially of men, is played for laughs. And I think that this is more what the Snape thing falls under, where the character, the male character, wears traditionally feminine clothes, and this is played for laughs because it goes against their expected gender expression. Does that make sense?
Yes. Now, I guess with that description, it does fall under because Snape is put in that dress specifically so that you laugh at it.
Right.
Like, that was the point. You're making Snape look ridiculous so that you can laugh at him and destroy the Bogart.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the only other example of this that I can think of right now is in Final Fantasy VII, which I know you don't care about, Joe. But in Final Fantasy VII, there's a scene where Cloud dresses up as a woman to, like, get into some club or something. I don't know exactly. I have not played the game. I just have consumed a lot of Final Fantasy VII adjacent media.
How do you feel about Mulan?
So Mulan is a tricky one, too. Okay, so this podcast is not about this trope specifically.
I'm not even thinking Mulan dressing up as a man, but when...
At the end.
At the end, when they dress up as women to help her.
Yeah, it is played for laughs. I think that, I don't know, and I'm not an expert here. You know, I'm a cis person. I think that this, especially in light of J.K. Rowling being who she is, I don't feel so good about it upon reflection.
Yes, but would you argue a vulture dress? I feel like the comical part truly was the vulture hat.
I don't think it is, though, because, like, remember Lupin is like, oh, make sure you give him, like, a nice big red purse, too. It's just, like, the emasculating him of him is the joke.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not trying to defend it. The part that sticks out in my head very much is the vulture head.
Okay. I think that the idea that, like, we're supposed to point and laugh to somebody who doesn't conform to our idea of, like, this is what somebody who wears a dress should look like, and Snape doesn't look like that. It enforces a very binary view of gender that I don't think is super great, let's say. Yeah. It's something I just wanted to bring up. It's something that was kind of picking at me. I would love to hear from people about how they feel about this. I did a little Googling about it, and unfortunately, Googling J.K. Rowling man in a dress trope, there's a lot of other things that come up, mostly to do with this mystery novel and not so much to do with the Snape thing. So I couldn't really find too much discourse online about it. But yeah, I just wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, it truly didn't occur to me. So thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah, so we can move on from it. It was a small mention in the beginning of this chapter, and I don't want to relitigate the last episode. But so this is going around the school. Obviously, the students are amused by it, and Snape is not. And yeah, this is like a weird chapter. Like, not a lot happens in this chapter.
So it starts out with Defense Against the Dark Arts is very popular. All the kids are enjoying it except for Malfoy and some of his cronies.
We basically
are just picking on him for looking shabby.
Yeah.
Which we've been picking on him for looking shabby, but I like Lupin.
I like Lupin too. We basically get like a run through of like the new classes and how people feel about them. We're like, Defense Against the Dark Arts, cool. Care Magical Creatures, not cool.
Not cool anymore.
Yeah.
Hagrid is very upset that
he's lost his fire.
Yes. His very ambitious first lesson did not go as planned. It ended with a student in the hospital wing. And now they've been spending this whole time, like a full month and a half, taking care of big worms. What are
flubber
they called?
Flubber worms. So I have a bit about flubber worms. There's a lot of magical creatures that are mentioned in this chapter, just like in passing. So I looked up stuff about all of them. So I'm going to run through them. I'll start with flubber worms. So as Joe said, flubber worms are the student's new project in Care Magical Creatures. According to Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, not the movie, the like companion book to the series, flubber worms have an X classification from the Ministry of Magic, which indicates boring.
Okay.
Apparently, this classification system was invented by someone like Hagrid, who thinks that danger and interest have a direct relationship, in that as danger increases, interest increases.
I mean, that seems to be the case.
Yeah, so
these students are not enjoying flubber worms.
Yeah, they're at the bottom. And I did look. I was very curious about, like, how does the scale go on from there?
Yeah, and what are the other markings?
They just add more X's. So like the top one is like XXXXX.
Okay, sure.
And it's dangerous to muggles, dangerous to wizards, possibly deadly to wizards. So flower worms are on the bottom of that scale. And yeah, that's all I really have to say about flubber worms.
It would make sense for him to go drastically the opposite direction. He might be overcompensating a little bit, but also he still doesn't know if he's going to have a job soon.
That's true. Yeah.
So yeah, make sure nothing happens while you're being watched.
Play
closely.
It safe. Yeah. Yes. Another thing that's mentioned in this chapter are red caps, which they've been studying in Defense Against the Dark Arts. And these are small goblin-like creatures that seem to be borrowed from Scottish folklore. They attack lost travelers, particularly muggles, because wizards can repel them with magic. We also hear about kappas, which is the pronunciation I'm going to go for with that, which also are mentioned in the context of Defense Against the Dark Arts. Kappas are water dwellers resembling a scaly monkey with webbed hands. There was an illustration of them on the Harry Potter lexicon that I did not like because I do have a fear of monkeys. And kappas are borrowed from Japanese mythology, according to the lexicon.
Okay.
And then
they're doing a lot of care magical creatures. Well, not care. This is defeating magical creatures.
It seems weird that in care of magical creatures in a month, they've learned about one thing. And in Defense Against the Dark Arts, they're going through all of these things. I feel like there could be some interdisciplinary connections there made between the professors if this was a better school.
And also, if they had planned their curriculum out at all. Hagrid may have had a fully planned curriculum, but if lesson two was dragons or the like,
I don't think Hagrid had a unit plan.
I would like
I don't
to believe
think he was asking
he
for...
had a long list of here are these cool animals that I was going to show off to these kids and how we're going to interact with them and take care of them. But he realized after the first one, it was like, we're going to start off with something cool and a little dangerous. And I'm sure it was going to go up from there.
A list of animals is not a unit plan. It is not a curriculum map. That would be like if somebody asked me what my curriculum was and I just listed the books we're going to read.
I mean, to an extent.
That is not what I do.
I know, but it would be the books that you're reading, the standards you're covering.
Yeah, I think the second part there is the part that Hagrid has not covered.
We don't know that because he threw it out the window and they're spending a month with flubber worms.
We do also hear about puffapods, which are mentioned in herbology class. And these are magical plants which drop beans when they're dropped on the floor.
No.
No? Is that wrong? When I typed it, it seemed wrong.
So I'm trying to find it. That was later on.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it from memory and then I'll correct myself when I find it in the chapter.
Great. Yeah. We'll fix it in post.
It was a bean plant, but like a string bean kind of thing where it's a pod. Uh-huh. So they were opening up the pods and putting them into a container. And when Ron dropped some of the beans, they bloomed on the floor.
Okay, fair. Puffapods do also release spores, which have various effects. And they are in some of the video games. They can be picked up, thrown, or exploded. And I want to say that they were in the Chamber of Secrets PS2 game.
Okay.
They're like the egg-looking things, kind of. The egg-looking plants that you can throw. I feel like I remember that, but I'm not sure.
I don't remember that at all, so.
Yeah, so that was my little roundup. There is another magical creature that's mentioned that we will talk about later, but I wanted to just quickly go over those.
Some of the other classes mentioned include Divination with Trelawney, and they talk about how Havarti and Lavender have been hanging out with Trelawney at lunchtime.
Yeah.
And they've fully bought into this.
Yes. I mean, I guess I'm glad that Trelawney has somebody to spend time with because it seems like otherwise she's just alone in that attic.
Yeah. And she does seem like the type of professor who would be like, yeah, you can hang out if you agree with me.
Oh, yeah, fully. Yeah. I mean, nobody hangs out in the classrooms of teachers that they don't like and don't agree with.
Yeah, but she was actively saying in the beginning of the book that she did not want to, she was not going to be around the other people because it would, lower her ability to...
Yeah, cloud her sight.
Yes. So she found some people some that saps. Wouldn't cloud her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wouldn't question her, maybe?
I think that's more accurate, yeah.
And that's it for classes that Harry cares about, because charms clearly isn't important. Transfiguration's not important. I don't even know. I feel like there are other classes.
History of magic.
History of magic. We'll never hear about again.
Yeah. At least transfiguration. Like, we have scenes of them in transfiguration class.
Yeah, we have a scene in them in transfiguration class this chapter.
Charms, I feel like, is fully forgotten about after the first book.
Completely. And like, we're going to see Professor Flitwick mentioned once, and I highlighted the line because I just loved the way it was said.
It was like, Flitwick, the tiny little charms teacher.
Yes, the tiny little professor.
Yeah.
I'm just like, really? That's how we're going? Okay, sure.
Apparently, yes.
There's another character that's just kind of thrown in to remind you they exist, which I think we should dive into later on.
Are you talking about my boyfriend, Oliver Wood?
No.
Okay. Good.
Oliver Wood is a good chunk of this.
Okay. I was really afraid you were going to just like brush Oliver Wood off like that. And no. I was about to be real upset.
Because Quidditch is starting now. So we get, you know, our yearly description of how Quidditch works, what it is. We meet all the Quidditch players. This team has not changed in the 3 years that we've had it.
But sadly, it will be
Oliver
changing
Wood
soon.
Is on his last leg. This is his final year at Hogwarts.
He's not dying.
He's making it seem like it.
he is talking about, like, this is my last chance.
This is our last chance. It's my last chance. Do not ruin this for me. Harry, stop getting hurt.
He wants that Quidditch Cup real bad. He gives this like impassioned speech about like, we've got the best chasers out there and a great seeker who's never failed us and two incredible beaters. And he's like, oh, and also
and
me. Yeah, too. Also me. And I kind of like that. Like that he's not a hot-headed player in the sense of like, I'm the greatest there's ever been. Like, he just loves like gassing up his teammates.
Yeah, he fully supports his teammates and he knows this is a team effort.
Yeah, like he doesn't want that Quidditch Cup for himself. He's like,
he wants that Quidditch Cup for himself. He wants that Quidditch Cup for himself.
But I think that he's also like, we're a great team.
Yes.
And a lot of weird things have gotten in the way of us getting the Quidditch Cup in the past couple years.
But also, have a backup player. Truly,
sure, yeah.
You didn't have to forfeit the game because you only had 7 people. You could have grabbed a body.
I do wonder what the policy at Hogwarts is for that. Like, if there are subs, you know?
Apparently not.
Yeah. But I wonder if that is like a school policy thing that nobody has subs or just the Gryffindor team doesn't have subs.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. So, yes, Oliver is gassing everybody up. He is in fine form this chapter and they are having Quidditch practice now 3 times a week.
Yes, which is pretty reasonable.
Is that reasonable? How often are like sports when
you're
in
school? Sport practices in like high school were every day.
That's too much.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Okay.
It was most of your time.
It will surprise no one to know that I was not an athlete in school. So the Quidditch thing kind of goes by. Harry, sopping wet, goes up to the common room afterwards because, listen, it's October, so it be raining.
Yep.
And
this is kind of like our transition to later on because we get to see him train over and over again.
Yeah, there would be a training montage in here somewhere.
And now it's just about Halloween.
Yes. So it's late October. Harry is going up to the common room after a rainy Quidditch practice and sits down with Ron and Hermione, and they're all a buzz because the next Hogsmeade trip is coming up, or the first Hogsmeade trip,
the
I should
very
say,
first of the year
is on Halloween.
Yep.
Which seems like a bad idea.
No, it's perfect. Here's a holiday. This is our first holiday that we're going to be celebrating at school.
I guess.
And, you know, go have fun in town.
I know how antsy kids get on holidays.
Yeah. Do you want them trapped inside?
I wouldn't want to set them loose on a village.
The village has signed up for it. Okay. They're happy to take their money for the candy.
That's fair. And so everybody's a buzz about this. And Harry, of course, gets all mopey because he has not had his permission slip signed.
Yes. McGonagall, make sure to remind everyone, you have to have your permission slip signed or else you cannot go. So make sure you turn it in before the trip.
Yeah. Ron eggs Harry to ask McGonagall for permission, and there's a little scrap between Crookshanks and Scabbers, while they're in the common room.
It was more of a scrap between Crookshanks and Ron's bag.
Yeah.
Ron's bag, there's a line that said, let's see, Crookshanks attacks Ron's bag because Scabbers is inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron is like swinging the bag around trying to get Crookshanks off.
Yeah.
And when Scabbers hops out of the bag and runs away, it says, Crookshanks freed himself from the remnants of the bag, sprang over the table and chased after the terrified Scabbers.
Yes.
Remnants of that bag. Crookshanks destroyed it.
I'm very curious. What do you think that their bags look like?
Like,
are they backpacks?
I picture like a laptop bag.
Like a messenger bag?
Yeah.
Okay. Hmm. I've always imagined them as like canvas totes, you know, like you take to the supermarket or something.
Okay.
I don't know why. I'm just
that
imagining.
That never occurred to me.
Okay. I'm just imagining like Scabbers. Like, why was he floating around in Ron's bag?
No, I feel like a messenger bag would make sense.
Yeah. If there were like multiple pockets and it was like, hey, this is the little pocket that Scabbers lives in. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So Crookshanks goes over.
Scabbers does not live in that bag, by the way.
I know.
For those concerned listeners, Scabbers doesn't live inside the bag all the time. Although
we don't know that.
Scabbers doesn't seem to have a cage either.
No. None of these animals seem to have cages or like places to be other than the owl.
Like, animals need an environment to,
yeah,
like, hide and, you know, like...
Make a nest.
Toads really shouldn't just have to sit on the floor.
No, they need, like, water and stuff.
Yeah.
So Ron does get very upset with Hermione about this for not, I don't know, leashing Crookshanks. For not putting Crookshanks in a cage. And Hermione is all like, this is what cats do. Cats chase rats, Ron. I don't know what to tell you.
He's friendly. It's fine. Oh, he's friendly. He just wants to say hi.
Hermione is a bad pet owner.
Yes, she is.
Ron makes a really good dig at her a little bit later. We'll get to
the start of a fun relationship.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, that's my next note. So later on, Lavender is crying because her pet rabbit has been killed by a fox. And she links this to Trelawney's prophecy.
Today is the 16th of October. Yeah. And Hermione, you know, dives into it a little bit.
Classic Hermione moment.
The sensitive, skeptical one.
She says, well, look at it logically, which is such a mean thing to say to someone who's just lost a pet. Like, I know that Lavender is ridiculous, but Hermione does not have an ounce of sympathy in her body.
Not a chance. So the first thing she asked was, were you actually dreading this?
Yeah, she goes through this like interrogation of poor Lavender. Like, was it an old rabbit? And Lavender's like, no, it was just a baby. And she's like, well, you weren't really dreading it then. Why would you dread your baby rabbit dying? It's so mean.
It's so mean. And then she goes into, Binky didn't even die today. Lavender just got the news today.
I know. It's really bad. And Ron gets that dig in and he's like, it's okay, Lavender. Hermione doesn't care about other people's pets.
Yeah.
This is where I get upset about movie Hermione, because book Hermione is really mean sometimes. And movie Hermione is made lovable to the audience in a way that I don't think that book Hermione is. Book Hermione is difficult to like sometimes, and this is one of those scenes.
Definitely. Although it is good that we have a perspective of someone that's not just buying into Trelawney stuff.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. Trelawney gave this obscure date, and yes, Lavender got some bad news that day, but she was not dreading her baby rabbit dying.
Like, Hermione could have felt any which way that she wants to about this. Like, it's fine. Hermione is a logical, rational character who we know questions Trelawney and prophecies. So this totally fits, and it's a good nuance to the book. But a kinder
also,
person
yeah.
would have just been like, I'm sorry to hear that, Lavender, just ranted to Harry later.
You can be skeptical and not...
a jerk.
Yeah. You don't have to be mean to the person who just lost their rabbit.
Yeah. It's... But like, also, this is something that I love about Hermione, because I like when Hermione is allowed to have flaws, because movie Hermione just is not a flawed character in a way that just makes her seem unreal.
And mildly unrelated, but for the classic magician's assistant, it's weird that bunnies aren't on the list of approved familiars.
Wasn't there a thing about that? That rabbits like used to be allowed at Hogwarts?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I feel like I remember that. I feel like when Hagrid was talking about like pets that are allowed at Hogwarts. No, he says like toads were all the rage a few years ago, but now they're kind of passe. I don't know. I'll have to look that up later. But yeah, that's a good point. That's the stereotypical, like, yeah, wizards have rabbits.
Well, magicians have rabbits.
Yeah. What was Lavender's...
Wizards have cats.
What was Lavender's rabbit's name?
Binky.
Binky? Yeah, yes. That's
Binky
pretty good.
The baby bunny.
Yeah. The name Binky just makes me think of Arthur.
Yeah.
Binky Barnes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then at the end of Transfiguration class, Harry decides to ask McGonagall for permission to go to Hogsmeade. He frames it as like, oh, well, they forgot to sign my permission slip.
Speaking of forgot, can I stop you there and sure. go back to the beginning of that scene where Neville calls out, Professor, I think I forgot my permission slip. And McGonagall says, yeah, your grandma already mailed it to me. She thought that would be a much better idea.
I really like Neville's grandma. I want to know more about her. Yes.
The things I know, I love.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I really appreciate a parent that's like, I know.
Yeah.
You know,
my kid's a problem, but we got to get him there.
Yeah. And let's not forget, she is the one that bought Neville a remember all, like, 2 months into the school year, his first year.
Like, she knows.
Yes.
Plus, gotta love that vulture hat.
Yeah. It's a big choice. It's a big statement. But Harry scrapes up the courage to go ask McGonagall for permission to go to Hogsmeade, even after she's like, no permission slip, no go to Hogsmeade.
But you could sign it, right?
He doesn't ask her to sign it. He asks her for permission. That's something yes. in the movies that he asks, like, but I thought you could sign
it. He does ask Fudge to sign it yes. in earlier chapters.
Yeah, he's really... He's trying to be slick and it's just not working for him. But
anyone sign this piece of paper?
He says to McGonagall, first he tries to make the excuse like, oh, they forgot. And then he's like, you know that they're muggles. They don't really understand Hogwarts stuff. Conveniently leaving out the whole I blew up my aunt in a fury thing.
Which McGonagall is 100% aware of.
Totally. Absolutely. And McGonagall actually has like a reaction that confuses Harry. She looks at him with what he thinks is pity and kind of just says, I'm sorry, like you can't go. You didn't get the permission slip signed. And I want to ask, because the Harry McGonagall relationship is one that I find very touching. What do you think McGonagall's thoughts here are? Like, why? What was that look that she gave him?
Well, so what she says right before it is, the form clearly states that the parent or guardian must give permission.
Right.
So that immediately brings up he doesn't have parents anymore.
Right.
Like, I'm sure there is genuine pity there. And she knows, she was there when she dropped off Harry. Like, she knows the family that she left them, that right. she left him with. She's well aware that they're not great people. Like, she, that is 100% pity. Or just sadness in general.
Yeah.
Like, she definitely feels bad, but she's also fully on Hermione's side and Fudge's side and every other adult. It's not a good idea for yeah. him to go to Hogsmeade right now.
So my read of that, I didn't think about her considering like, oh, these are the people, like that being a reminder for her that like Harry does not come from a good home. I was thinking more along the lines of McGonagall knows something about Harry's connection to Sirius Black, something that precludes him from going to Hogsmeade. And also just pity that Harry doesn't get to be like a normal kid. And I think that that goes along with what you were saying about like he doesn't have normal parents or everybody. But like, I don't know. It was a very sweet moment, I think, knowing what I know about how their relationship develops. And I like to think that McGonagall cares about Harry
yes.
in a way. And
she definitely does.
She definitely does. But I like to think that she wishes for him that he could just have these normal third year experiences like going to Hogsmeade. But he can't
yeah.
because he's Harry.
Because of his safety. It's yeah. you know, you can enjoy a few days in Hogsmeade and then it can be all over for you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And we can't take that risk.
So I thought it was a sweet scene. It definitely is more emotional in the movie when Harry is like, well, I thought you could sign it because you're like a parent to me implicitly. And that might be Harry trying to guilt her a little bit, but it's a kind thing because it's like he does view her in a way as a guardian. Like
yeah.
she is maybe the closest thing to a paternal figure that, not paternal, parental figure that Harry has at Hogwarts at this point, because she is the head of his house. Hagrid maybe is an argument. Like, we've talked about Hagrid as
Hagrid's
a maternal
like a fun
figure.
Uncle.
I would argue that he is maternal in many ways, but the problem is that he is an irresponsible maternal figure.
Yeah, that's the fun uncle.
If Harry rolled up and was like, well, I got my permission slip signed by Hagrid, that would be an issue.
Yes, if Hagrid currently knows better, as long as he's sober enough.
Yeah.
But if Hagrid did sign that and Harry came over to McGonagall with it, McGonagall would have some words with Hagrid.
Yes.
She would not just let that fly.
Yeah. She would have some words with Harry, too. Like, who do you think I am? What do you think you're pulling on me? But yeah, I thought that that was a sweet scene, that like you always expect McGonagall to be very stern in her replies and very strict. So for her to kind of soften a little bit, I always like when we get to see that side of McGonagall.
Yeah.
So Ron and Hermione go to Hogsmeade without Harry, and Harry just mopes around the castle for a while. I do want to talk about some of the shops in Hogsmeade that we hear about.
Should we talk about them in terms of Percy being a very supportive?
Yeah, Percy does give his little comfort to Harry, let's say.
They make a fuss about Hogsmeade, but I assure you, Harry, it's not all it's cracked up to be. All right. The sweet shop's rather good, but Zonko's joke shop is frankly dangerous. And yes, the Shrieking Shack's always worth a visit. But really, Harry, apart from that, you're not missing anything.
Yeah, it's real pompous. It's like somebody
it's like he's trying to make him feel better in Percy's own way, but also Percy's not downplaying anything at all.
No.
And he's just like, well, the...
There's something's worth
the
seeing
The prank
there.
Shop is dangerous. And yeah, there's like great tourist traps, and I do love candy, but
So we hear about various shops in Hogsmeade, and I don't want to go too deep into them because I think that we can discover them organically as we read the books. But there is Zonko's joke shop, which Percy said is dangerous. There's not really been any background info on Zonko himself, who is presumably the owner, or really much interesting about the shop, but it is a favorite haunt of Fred and George, is important to note. Honeydukes is the sweet shop in Hogsmeade. It is owned by one Ambrosius Flume. In Greek mythology, ambrosia is the food or drink of the gods. So
that's fitting.
Yeah, that lends credibility to the sweets at Honeydukes. And Wizarding World ranked the best sweets in the Harry Potter universe. And Honeydukes chocolate was number two behind chocolate frogs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mind you, Honeydukes chocolate, once again, is just chocolate. It's not magic chocolate.
Chocolate is good.
Chocolate is good, but I'm saying there's so many magical things, but chocolate is magical in its cure for.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, but it's kind of standard chocolate that Lupin uses on the
chocolate.
Train. It's not like, oh, here's the Honeydukes chocolate.
Chocolate.
Yeah.
It's chocolate.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
They just make it very well.
Yeah. Dervish and Bangs sells wizarding equipment. We really don't hear much about like what exactly that means. Like, what is wizarding equipment? There is Dervish and Bangs at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, the theme parks. I can't for the life of me remember what that shop sells, because all of them just sell like t-shirts and plushes and wands, and it's not that distinct.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Three Broomsticks, which is the local pub, and it will feature heavily throughout the series as we go on. So again, I don't want to get too deep into it, but Ron and Hermione do mention butterbeer when they get back.
Is this the first time they talk about butterbeer?
I think it is. I think this is the first mention of butterbeer. So I want to talk a little bit about butterbeer. Ron and Hermione mention it, and they say that it warms you up. And I want to ask, is that something alcohol can do? Or is that like a magic thing?
There can be like a warming sensation.
Okay.
You're not actually physically warmed up.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought so, but I wasn't sure. That like, I know it's like a sensation thing, but I didn't know. Is that something that beer specifically tends to do?
I'm not a fan of beer.
Okay.
So
like you have never had a beer that warmed you?
I've never had a beer that warmed me, but they are on the other side of the pond. Okay. So this could be warm beer.
And also it's magic. So that's it. Yeah. It is. Butterbeer is served both warm and cold, we learn later in the series. So I don't know. It was a chilly day that they went to Hogsmeade. So maybe they were serving it warm to
theoretically,
warm people up.
They could have said this about hot chocolate.
Sure. Yeah.
But, you know, it could be like if there's a spice to it or like cinnamon, that could be something I like.
So like you have had an alcoholic drink that warmed you, that like gave you a warm sensation.
Sure.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah. I was curious.
This is a very weak alcohol. Like these kids are not going out and...
There's a lot of discussion about that, about whether butterbeer is an alcoholic drink. I kind of land on the side of like, it's probably a very low alcohol content because children are able to like buy it and drink it freely. Of course, we have to acknowledge that the UK has very different laws and rules about alcohol consumption by minors. But, you know, ginger beer is non-alcoholic, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So it very well could be.
Because that's like root beer.
Yeah. It very well could be non-alcoholic. Could be alcoholic. It's not clear.
My thought is, you know, going back to olden times in England when water was not safe to drink, so everything was fermented so that it was safe to drink. So everything was a little alcoholic just to kill off what was in the water.
Okay. There is also an actual drink called buttered beer in the real world from like the 16th and 17th century.
Okay.
I don't think it's really popular right now.
What was it?
There was like a recipe on the Harry Potter wiki. I can pull it up if you're really interested.
Can you give me just like the base?
It had a bunch of ingredients. Kind of, I don't remember. I don't know. I couldn't even tell you what the ingredients of beer are. They're like wheat, right?
Wheat, barley, hops, one of them.
Okay. Buttered beer. I'm looking at an Instructables article. Ale beer, ginger, cloves, nutmeg, sugar, 5 egg yolks. Do you use egg to make beer?
It sounds like the base ingredient they just said was beer.
And butter.
So that might be like, how do you recreate this flavor versus like, how do you actually brew it?
Yeah, I don't know about the brewing of
it. Yeah, we'll have egg to go back yolks, to the 16th though. Century to try and get that real recipe.
Yeah, okay. So buttered beer is an actual... beverage.
Sounds like you shouldn't drink that.
No, I wouldn't. In a 2002 interview with Bon Appetit, the magazine, Rowling said of butterbeer that she made it up and that she imagines it to taste a little bit like a less sickly butterscotch. And I want to ask you about this, too, because I don't care for butterscotch. Butterscotch has exclusively been consumed by me from like a bowl in my grandma's house.
Yes, that's where they come from. That's where butterscotch originates from, bowls in old people's homes.
Would you describe butterscotch as sickly tasting?
No, I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
In this context, I have no guess as to, is she saying it's like a sweeter?
I guess.
Or is it like just a more diluted flavor, like a less pronounced?
Is there like butterscotch flavored medicine?
No.
Okay.
I mean, maybe, but...
I was confused by this also.
I don't think so.
Okay. So my last thing about butterbeer. They serve butterbeer at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. And I seem to remember you ordering it.
Yes.
Did you like it?
It was...
Do you remember what it tasted like?
So they very much went for butterscotch-ish flavored.
It looked very creamy to me, too.
They made... the foam separately. It wasn't, that foam was not created by them pouring it into the glass. They made a drink and they made a foam. I enjoyed the foam better than the drink.
Okay, interesting. And it was non-alcoholic, right?
It was non-alcoholic. Okay. Yes.
Which makes sense. If you're going to bring a child to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, they're going to want a butter beer.
Yeah.
And it is in America, so that would be a problem.
Yes.
Okay, interesting. There have been many, many recipes made up by fans over the years of like their version of butterbeer.
And they're all crazy. They're all so weird and things that I would never put in my body.
Okay, because I remember my siblings trying to make it once and they said it was disgusting. I did not try it. I saw the look on their faces after they tried it and was like, nope, I'm going to pass on that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of recipes out there. Maybe they just found a bad recipe. There's probably a good butterbeer recipe out there, but I don't know.
And also this is a made up drink. So, you know, make something that tastes a little bit like butter and call it butterbeer, I guess.
Listen, I love butter. I don't know if I want a butter flavored beverage.
It's just got a little bit of butter.
And I don't like butterscotch and I don't drink alcohol. So I don't think butterbeer is for me.
I don't think so at all.
Yeah. And the butterbeer recipes that I've seen online, I was always like, that doesn't seem good.
Yeah.
I would go to the Three Broomsticks and order a root beer, which is what I do at actual bars. I like to live on the edge. So Harry mopes around the castle, basically, while everybody is at Hogsmeade. He kind of just wanders around for a while. Like, he's in the common room and he runs into Colin Creevy. And Colin very nicely invites Harry to, like, come and sit with his friends. And Harry's like, oh, no, I want no part in that.
I would rather go study than do that.
Yeah.
And then he truly does head towards the library.
And then he's like, wait, no, like, studying,
no,
that's for nerds.
Never mind. Don't want to do that either.
Yes.
But I truly get that feeling of, like, I don't want to do anything. I want to be alone.
Yes.
I'm just going to meander around.
Totally. I get that he's upset. He feels left out. Absolutely. So he's just like meandering around the castle. He runs into Filch, who's like, you don't want to get some stink bombs and other nuisances down at Hogsmeade like the rest of your classmates. And that happens.
And Filch says, go back to your common room where you belong.
Yeah. But like, this is a day off. Yeah.
To wander the halls? Are they not allowed to be in the hallways?
Yeah. And like, what if he was actually going to the library?
Yeah.
And I guess I can see, though, like, there are approved areas for you to be in which you will be supervised. Like, in the common room, presumably, like, it's Percy's job as head boy to supervise in there. In the library,
Percy's in Hogsmeade.
Okay, true. But like in the library, Madam Pins is watching over you. You know, it's like when you're in school and you're in study hall, which we have here in America, where like you can go other places, but you can't roam the hallways.
Yeah, that's fair.
But there's also like a lot of cool stuff at Hogwarts. Like, what if you wanted to go look around the trophy room? I feel like they should have the freedom to do that. But I get Filch's perspective of like Filch is telling him to go back to the common room because Filch probably sees an errant student in the hallway and thinks they're going to cause trouble.
And Filch knows Harry.
Yes.
Harry is not one for meandering around
and not
and
causing
being
trouble. So Harry wanders around some more and he eventually finds himself in Lupin's office. He runs into Lupin and Lupin invites him in to share a cup of tea. And Harry asks Lupin why he stopped him from facing the Boggart. Lupin has to pull it out of him a little bit. He's like, it seems like something's on your mind, Harry. Is there anything you want to talk about? And Harry's like, no. Wait, yes.
Yeah, he just like sits on that for a little bit and then abruptly, yes, okay. And I appreciated Lupin's answer.
Yes.
Lupin thought that the Boggart would turn into Lord Voldemort.
Yes.
And that would have been a problem.
Of course, yeah. To have Lord Voldemort appear in the staff room, absolutely.
Like, even Boggart Lord Voldemort is a problem.
Yeah.
If, like, okay, now it's in the staff room, there are a bunch of students that are going to freak out. These students have never seen Lord Voldemort before.
Yeah. And I do like, too, Lupin comes out and says, like, yes, I did stop you from seeing the Boggart. And Harry is taken aback by this. He cannot believe that Lupin admits that he did this. There's a line where it says he's taken aback because he's used to adults denying things that they've done. And I want to plaster this part of the book in front of everyone that always criticizes the Harry Potter books by saying, like, why didn't they just tell an adult? Harry is used to being gaslit by the adults in his life. Like, he has been taught through experience that if you try to tell an adult something, they are going to get mad at you and lock you in your cupboard.
Yeah. This is a relatively new experience for him.
Yeah.
And for it to be so straightforward.
Right. To have like a trusting relationship with an adult. Because even though we can argue like Harry has a particular relationship with like McGonagall or with Dumbledore that some might argue mirrors a parental relationship, Dumbledore and McGonagall are always like withholding information from him, and not necessarily in a malicious way. That's a much larger conversation that we cannot and will not get into at this point in the books about the withholding of information. But for Harry to have a frank conversation with an adult who treats him as an equal, who treats him as someone with thoughts that he respects and cares about, this is like a brand new experience for Harry.
How do you feel Hagrid's relationship with Harry is then?
I think Hagrid's relationship with Harry is different because it doesn't really deal with real issues past that like first chapter or so of them in Diagon Alley together in the first book. That like it's very much a relationship of care. It's not necessarily a relationship of mutual respect. And I'm not saying that in the sense that Hagrid and Harry don't respect each other, but like they don't have intellectual philosophical conversations in the way that Harry and Lupin do in this moment.
Okay. And I could see that he is more or less removed from Hagrid right now.
Like, yes.
He gets to see him during class time, but Hagrid has made it clear you should not be wandering over here whenever you feel like.
Hagrid to me is very much a character that cares about Harry's emotional well-being in as far as like, hey, I'm going to sit with you and be a pal and, you know, we can have my awful little cakes together and have a cup of tea together and just like be buddies. Whereas Lupin is somebody who challenges Harry a little more.
Okay.
Lupin also is regarded as a paternal figure to Harry in the books in the way that I don't think Hagrid is.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah. And it's a really interesting scene that these two sit down and like Lupin hears Harry. You know, he gives his explanation of like, I didn't want Lord Voldemort appearing and scaring everyone. But Harry feels comfortable enough sharing, like, I did think that it would be Lord Voldemort in that moment. But as I thought about it more, I thought of the Dementors.
And Lupin's response was very interesting because he says, yeah. I'm impressed. That suggests that what you fear most is fear.
Yeah. And he says that that's wise. And I feel like this is a copped a little bit from FDR, who coined that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Fear itself, yeah. But it is like another way to look at these Dementors of like they embody fear.
They embody fear. I think they embody trauma more than fear.
Yes. But, you know, are you not afraid of your past traumas? Like that doesn't bring up fear.
I mean, one would hope that one is not, is that that you have confronted your past traumas. But no, absolutely. I just think that like if I had to name what Dementors embody, I would say trauma. Lupin says fear, though, and that's fine. We can have different opinions.
Okay.
Yeah. So Lupin does suggest that. And it's notable, too, that Lupin uses Voldemort's name. He doesn't say you know who or the Dark Lord or anything. He says Voldemort.
And that was, so far, just Harry, Dumbledore, and the one time Harry made Hagrid say it.
Yeah, so the book notes that this is the only time Harry had ever heard someone say the name out loud other than Dumbledore. And the Harry Potter Wiki lists this as a mistake because Hagrid said it at one point. I don't really count Hagrid saying it.
Well, because the way that Harry's thinking about it is, it was said so casually. Hagrid did not casually bring up Lord Voldemort's name.
Hagrid couldn't spell it, so he whispered it to Harry. I do not count that as Hagrid is a person who freely uses Lord Voldemort's name.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's an important thing to note about Lupin, but also that conversation about fear that they have. I don't know that I consider that wise, to fear fear, to fear an uncontrollable emotion that like is just a part of being human.
I think he's saying like not be afraid of being afraid, but like you're afraid of the thing that is fear. Like this is bringing up your own fears. It's creating fears in you. Like you're afraid of the essence of fear and not you're afraid of being afraid.
Okay. That's fair.
I think you're thinking way too deep into this and I think we have to move on.
Okay. Harry does go, but not before Snape walks in.
Snape comes in with a smoking goblet.
Yeah. A goblet of fire.
In my head. No, there's no fire. Just a goblet of smoke and bad tasting medicine.
Yes. And Harry has the immediate urge to slap it out of Lupin's hands.
Harry is convinced that Snape is poisoning Lupin.
Which, like, Harry goes through some wild theories about Snape throughout these books.
But this is my favorite one because it truly is Snape made a potion at the request of Lupin.
And Lupin
poisoned it. And it's like, if you want more, I got more in my classroom.
Yeah.
You can just come ask for it.
And like Lupin is expecting it. He's anticipating the taste of it. Harry has nothing.
I know all about this. I've clearly drank it all before.
Right.
And he's like, oh, you know, Snape is such a powerful potions master. He's very good at this. I'm very glad he was able to do this because I'm terrible at potions.
And like very few people can do this.
Yeah.
And Hermione even says to Harry, I think it's Hermione, says like, do you really think he would poison Lupin with you right there in front of him? And like, again, Hermione's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very silly of Harry. And I guess I can't fault him too much because Snape has abused this poor child that like, sure, if I was treated that way by Snape, I would be like, yeah, what's poisoning to him? He already treats everybody like garbage. So sure.
And Harry does end up saying to Lupin, instead of knocking the glass out of, he just says, Snape's very interested in the dark arts.
Yeah.
Some people reckon he'd do anything to get the Defense of the Dark Arts job.
And Lupin is amused by this, which is notable.
Yeah, he does just move on.
I think he's amused by the idea of Harry telling him all this as if he doesn't know.
Right after that, he just drinks the drink, calls it disgusting, and says, I'll see you later.
Yeah.
Like he really doesn't address it. And it's as soon as Snape shows up with that goblet, he's looking to avoid questions. He's looking to just get it down of like, oh, you know, I'm a little off color right now.
Yeah.
Snape is very good at making these things and it's going to make me feel better.
Yeah. I think he was more amused by the idea that Harry thought he was informing Lupin of all of these things and the suggestion that Harry was not so subtly making that like, hey, that could be poisoned.
Yeah. I don't see like where in here it actually seems like Lupin's even addressing what Harry's saying at all.
You're going to make me open up the book.
I can tell you Professor Snape is very interested in the dark arts. He blurted out. Really? Lupin said, looking only mildly interested as he took another gulp of potion. Some people reckon, Harry hesitated, then plunged on recklessly. Some people reckon he'd do anything to get the Defense Against the Dark Arts job. Lupin drained the goblet and pulled a face. Disgusting, he said. Well, Harry, I'd better go back to work. I'll see you at the feast later.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I read that as amusement, but he does kind of just like brush everything off and dismiss Harry politely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ron and Hermione come back with a series of gifts for Harry that they've collected from Hogsmeade.
A series of gifts being a pile of candy.
Yeah, I mean, hey.
I would appreciate that series of gifts.
Absolutely.
But like if I hear series of gifts, I'm thinking, oh, you know, a little gift from each shop they went to. No, Honeydukes. Honeydukes, Honeydukes, Honeydukes.
There's a lot of candy, though. So they bring back a bunch of stuff for Harry. They go down to the feast and have Halloween feast, which they all pig out at, despite having filled themselves with candy earlier. Mm-hmm. And then they head back upstairs to the common room. But there's a big crowd in front of the portrait of the fat lady. And Percy pushes himself through like, oh, I'm head boy, please. And they find that the portrait has been slashed and the fat lady is gone.
Yes. Before this scene, I did want to bring up, like, during the feast, we have the brief mention that Litwick exists still.
Flitwick?
Flitwick exists still, where Lupin is still alive, not poisoned, at least seemingly. He was talking animatedly to tiny little Professor Flitwick, the charms teacher. But then Nearly Headless Nick had great success with the reenactment of his own botched beheading. I guess he's not having any more parties.
Oh, yeah. This would be the death day party. But that was his 500th death day.
So 501 doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's not as important.
Yeah.
Plus, the last one was a little devastating for him.
Yeah, I could see not wanting to do that again.
Yeah. I'm glad that he's come to terms with his beheading in that he can reenact it for
he's just
students.
Joking around with it.
Yeah.
I think he was making a joke of it in the beginning, too.
Sure, but like there was a deep insecurity there for him last year.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to join the Headless Hunt, you better not be nearly.
Yes. So back to the fat lady portrait, because that's actually important.
Yes.
Percy says, like, somebody get Dumbledore, and Dumbledore appears like near instantly.
Which, when has that ever been the case? Whenever Harry needs Dumbledore, he is gone, like not even in Hogwarts anymore.
It was the security cameras.
Yeah.
Around Hogwarts.
So Dumbledore Dumbledore is summoned. Ginny shows up to say, what's going on?
Yeah. And this is like the capacity that Ginny will be in for the next few books of just like, remember Ginny?
That's her line for the chapter completely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen her in several chapters.
Yeah.
What's going on? All right. Bye.
Yep. Ginny exists. Bye. Percy has more to do in this book, entire book.
He's head boy.
Yeah.
He's head boy. It's important.
Yeah. So Dumbledore appears. He goes into crisis mode. He is like, check every single portrait for her. And Peeves is laughing in the distance.
Do you know who was told to search every single portrait?
Filch,
of
course.
Yeah. Filch, the man without powers, is going to go walk to every portrait in the entire building until he finds the fat lady.
You feel like they should have a spell or something. You know, like,
right?
Where is the fat lady?
Or even just, you know, ask more than one person.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
Ask more than one person to find someone in every painting in this entire castle.
Although he might want the other professors around because Peeves tells them that it was Sirius Black who did it.
Peeves also told them exactly where she was anyway. So Filch didn't have to walk around after that.
That was very nice of Peeves.
Yeah.
So Peeves says that.
Very nice. Sorry to keep cutting you off. Peeves is very nice to Dumbledore. Peeves is afraid to mess with Dumbledore.
I mean, for good reason, because Dumbledore could presumably throw him out of the castle.
Well, we've talked about how that's impossible.
We have. You're right.
He is the essence of
mischief at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is nice to Dumbledore, though. And he explains that Sirius Black was trying to get into the common room and got very angry when the fat lady would not let him in. And so he slashed the portrait.
Yeah. Nasty temper he's got.
Yes. And that is where the chapter ends. So not a lot happens. I say an hour into this recording.
I was going to say, are you sure about that?
I'm really hung up on that the only thing you fear is fear itself thing.
I mean, if you keep making it the exact quote, you're going to keep harping on it. But
it's just like a real hokey and it just doesn't. Okay, I'm going to shut up about it now. We've already dedicated
enough
time.
It's time to move on. It really isn't that important of a line.
One could argue it is.
Okay.
I'm not interested in making that argument, so instead, let's do Spell of the Week.
For Spell of the Week this week, we are talking about the magical creature. We've got a lot of those this chapter, and not a spell to be seen. So we're talking about Grindelows, the creature that Harry will be learning about next. We got a little tidbit about them while they were in Lupin's office. Grindelows are pale green water demons with sharp horns, pointed fangs, and spindly fingers. Grindelows come from Yorkshire legends, derived from Grindel, in Middle English meaning fierce or angry. In Old Norse, Grindel means storm or wind. Low refers to below sea level, and that is from the Harry Potter lexicon. We have, in the chapter itself, Lupin talks about how getting away from them, because they will attack you, getting away from them is simple. The trick is to break his grip. And he says, notice the abnormally long fingers, strong but very brittle, which makes me think he literally means break.
Sure, yeah.
His grip.
I mean, when you're breaking, like if somebody grabs you and you break their grip, I always assume that means break their fingers.
No, breaking someone's grip, like just if you're saying you have to break out of something, you know, you don't have to break to break someone's grip. You just have
How
to get
else?
Out of their grip. Like,
okay, I
if
guess.
You grab someone, if someone grabs onto you, friends, you want to grab the like the palm of the hand right below their thumb and pull that way. That's where they have the least amount of resistance. You don't want to try and pry up the fingers usually.
I should probably take a self-defense class or
you
something.
Should
yeah. I get myself into some situations.
Do you?
I feel like I've been in places that I don't feel safe.
Okay. I
parking garages.
Yeah, but in this situation, this poor one Grindelow is going to be practiced on by the third years, and they're all going to take turns snapping his fingers.
Sure.
Which is horrifying to me.
Practical defense against the dark arts lessons.
They also have like, are they going to stick their arms in there and practice snapping their fingers, snapping his fingers to get him off?
Is Lupin going to sick the Grindelwald on his students? And if so, how does that make him different than Hagrid?
Knowing the way to fix it right away and being able to use magic to solve the situation.
That should not be... If Hagrid needs to do magic to do his job safely, Hagrid should not be a teacher. I'm sorry. Like,
Hagrid
I understand,
should be able to use magic.
Hagrid should be able to use magic. But like, I understand the argument for like Hagrid has the experience, if not the formal training. But to ensure the safety of his students, if he is going to plan lessons the way that he does, he should be able to use the magic that would save them.
In theory, those flubberworms aren't hurting anyone now.
That we know of.
So the Grindelwalds, we've said, will obviously attack both muggles and wizards, but have been tamed by merpeople, which I thought was interesting.
Yes.
And that's really all you need to know about Grindelwalds for now. You'll be seeing them in a while.
Yeah, they'll be mentioned again.
Again.
Yeah.
They're not too important, but...
Well, they're, of course, important. They're our spell of the week.
They are our spell of the week, which means they're very important. Because I definitely remember what our spell of the week last week was.
It was ridiculous, wasn't it? Ridiculous. Yep, that one.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. No, we had a conversation about this. It was like ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Because ridiculous is the word.
Ridiculous. I already forgot how to pronounce it.
Okay. Oh, well, that was our spell of the week last week, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So join us next
week. No, I have to do my spiel first.
Hello and welcome
We do not have any emails this week, but you can send us an email to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. I believe I have fixed all of our email issues.
Send us an email so that I can find out.
Right. So. Yeah. It's not like I can send test emails or anything, but you can send us an email to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com explaining what the heck the only thing we have to fear is fear itself to me.
That's
I would love
still
that.
Just the quote.
Okay,
from
what does Lupin say then?
All right, I'll find it. Let's see.
That suggests that what you fear most of all is fear. Very wise, Harry.
Yeah.
Okay, so send us an email explaining what that means and how it connects to Dementors to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. You can review us on any of the podcast platforms. I don't care where, but, you know, send a kind word our way or a mean word. I would prefer kind words, but I mean, you know, go out there and say what you got to say. And you can subscribe to us, of course, wherever you find podcasts. I presume that you found a place to find podcasts if you're listening to this podcast. So, you know, hit that subscribe button so that you get new episodes of Podtrificus Totalis every week because they do come out on time now. And you can visit our website, podtrificustotalis.com, which has detailed show notes with links out to all the sites and stuff that we reference within the episode and all of our back episodes and things like that. And you can join us next week for Chapter 9 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Grim Defeat.